Imagine some of you traveled over the holidays. We did. We took a quick trip to Richmond after Christmas to visit our grandchildren and their parents, of course. I think we've been a little excessive this year. Al and I went up for Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. But the kids are kids for only so long, aren't they? When we left on the 29th, the airport was surprisingly uncrowded and hassle-free, unlike our November trip, when our plane was delayed for the most unusual reason I have ever heard in my life. Someone came on the loudspeaker and said flight, whatever it was, has been delayed because two cheetahs on their way to a new zoo have gotten lost loose in the luggage hold of your airplane. I looked up cheetah. I knew it was a big cat. Turns out that cheetahs are the fastest of all land animals. So it was fortunate that they were caught before they either ate the passengers up or bounded across the runway and down the streets of poor, unsuspecting College Park. It seems as if just about anything can happen when you travel. Our late friend, Dr. John Stone, a brilliant cardiologist and poet, had wonderful things to say about just about everything. He loved to repeat an announcement he heard over an airport intercom one time. This was the announcement: "Will the owner of a purple child's jacket please return to gate B10? "Forget the jacket," Dr. Stone admonished. "Begin mouth-to-mouth resuscitation." Purple child's jacket. I knew they were with me. Just takes a while here on the first Sunday of the year. Regardless of airport hassles, we all like to go places. Why do we like to go so much? Certainly to see those we love. But I am intrigued by one of the reasons time essayist Lance Morrow projects as to why we travel. He said we go places in order to scrape the ego, as one would scrape the barnacles off the bottom of a boat to make the water run more sleekly around the hull. We travel in order to do a sort of bypass on the heart so that the blood may flow through it more easily. Sympathies will be cleaner and clearer, and our humility becomes refurbished. Years ago, John Kenneth Galbraith wrote under a pseudonym called, a name called McLandris, and he cooked up the idea of a McLandris coefficient. I love this idea. That was his calculation of the length of time it took a public figure, a length of time a public figure could go without thinking about himself. The McLandris coefficient. That's a really good question. How long can you go without thinking about yourself? Morrow, no fan of Richard Nixon, estimated that Nixon could go no longer than 4 minutes without experiencing the McLandris effect. Travel makes us think about other things, gets us away from our ordinary lives so that we can recalibrate ourselves and make really important discoveries, such as this one: you are not the center of the universe. The people back home, they get along fine without you. And the people where you are, they don't even know you. You are not the center of the universe. You and I do not make the world go round. You don't have to travel to have this kind of experience. In fact, one of the reasons participating in worship is a crucial aspect of my own personal life is that Sunday is my day to scrape the barnacles off the bottom of my boat, to free myself of burdening self-concern so that I can remember that what sustains me is the love of God. What makes the world go around is the love of God. I remember that I am utterly dependent on God's mercy. And so I don't have to spend so much time worrying about myself. I can leave my worries, my aches, my pains, my unhappinesses, my anxieties aside because this is our Father's world. To be dependent on ourselves, one has said, on our own wealth, on our own skills, on our own goodness, on the approval of others is bondage. But to play homage to God, to pay homage to God as the Magi did you notice that expression appears 3 or 4 times in the text? To pay homage to God is how you get set right again. How does the Quaker hymn put it? To come down where we ought to be again and again and again, because our tendency is to get all messed up about these kinds of things. I know that most of us, when we feel as if we have issues to deal with, think that the New Year's period of time, is just when we ought to make resolutions. My problem with New Year's resolutions, well, it's a twofold problem. One, I never keep them when I make them, so there you go. I'm done by February, usually. But my other issue is that they really are so self-focused when we make them. I am going to lose weight. I need to save money. I'm going to tone up. I remember one New Year's Eve when a friend told me that she had failed so miserably in keeping resolutions in the past, she had decided to aim low. Oh, okay, so what's your resolution? I asked her. I'm going to floss more, she said. And I thought to myself, I have just been given too much information. The Magi, who traveled from the east, had little, if any, information to go on. They traveled because they were inspired by their astrology book. The book said, pay attention when a star appears in this particular spot of the heavens. And so they set out in hope that the star signaled the inbreaking of something new, something that neither they nor the world had ever seen before. They went searching. In Auden's magnificent poem, For the Time Being, each wise man explains his motivation. I journey to discover how to be truthful now, the first wise man says. To discover how to live now is what the second says. The third explains, to discover how to be loving now is the reason I follow this star. And then he goes on to say, naming perhaps our situation in a metaphorical way, we who live in a time when the winds are rough and the waters choppy, the weather has been awful, the countryside dreary, marsh, jungle, rock, and echoes mock, calling our hope unlawful. At least we know for certain that three are three old sinners, that this journey is too long, that we want our dinners, that we miss our wives, our books, our dogs, and have only the vaguest idea of why we are here. But we have come to discover how to be human. That is the reason we follow this star. To discover how to be human now. Not in the spring of 2008, not in the winter of 1957, but here and now with the particular problems and challenges we have to deal with. The Magi were rewarded because they stepped out into the unknown in hope, not cynicism. They believed that something new and different was genuinely possible. And at the end of their journey, they found the one for whom they searched. And though they were weary with travel, and though the weather had been terrible, they knelt down and offered him every good thing they had. They were overwhelmed by joy, is the way Matthew describes their state of mind. The weather hadn't changed. The atmosphere hadn't changed. The environment hadn't changed. The problems were still there. But in the midst of it all, they discovered the presence, the reality of God in our midst, who has come to us in the form of a little baby born to Mary. And the incredible message of the Magi is that the possibilities that he brings, the promises that he fulfills, are not only the possibilities and promises set out for the descendants of Abraham and Sarah, but look, they're for everybody, the Gentiles too. What a breakthrough. Illumination, enlightenment, epiphany, the joyful, sudden joyful seeing of things in their essence. In this instance, the Magi see that Jesus is Lord, not Herod, not Caesar, but Jesus is Lord. And they bow down before that little package of human flesh and bone and praise God. For in this particular baby is life, and that life will be the light of all people. And it was true 2,000 years ago, and it is true today. One of my heroines is a woman named Simone Weil. She writes, "We live in a world of unreality and dreams. To give up our imagining ourselves as the center of the universe is to awaken to all that is real and eternal. It is to see the true light. It is a transformation analogous to that which takes place in the dusk of the evening, where suddenly we recognize that the rustling of leaves was actually the voices of people. The tree we thought was a tree turns out to be a stooping man. We're seeing the same things, but now the things are illumined and we see them for real. We see the power in the cradle, not the power in the palace. We awaken to the deep things that really matter. And we can go on the Magi's kind of journey and never leave our homes. Near the conclusion of Four Quartets, T.S. Eliot writes, "We shall not cease from exploration, and at the end of all our exploration will be to arrive at where we started and to know the place for the first time." The Magi were warned by God in a dream not to go back the same way because Herod intended to destroy the baby and ended up killing all the boy babies in and around Jerusalem. So they went home another way. They reset their course in a surprising way. But look, even though that wasn't their plan, it was God's plan, and they were open to it. Sometimes you think that what's needed is just to put your head down and keep on pressing on just the way you've been doing it. But sometimes God says, wait a minute. That's not going to work for you. Do it this way. Go this way. They went back to their homes. The world with all its troubles had not changed, but they were changed. They saw life differently, and they felt and acted differently. They knew that, as Eliot puts it, all will be well, and everything will be well, because God is God. And God has entered our world with grace and redemption once and forever. The Magi had seen real power for the first time in their lives. The power of love and vulnerability. The power that comes from on high. I want to say one more word about this change of plans and how God is at work in the surprises of our lives as well as in what we expect. I want to say to this church on the eve of a new year, when we are going to be traveling around our facility in a different way, that God is still at work. And it's our job to discern when and where and how God is calling us to step up and be Christ's people for the sake of the world. The meaning of that star in the sky is that God is at work in human events and uniquely and profoundly at work in the events surrounding the birth and life and teachings, the death and resurrection of Christ. The star tells us that history does not stand still, and therefore we need to keep stepping out in faith. The star says that we live by grace, and we participate in a story that is infinitely more full of promise than you and I could ever imagine. As we think about our ordination, those of us who will be ordained or have been ordained before, I remember going to seminary 30 years ago. Just to tell you how things have changed in my lifetime, when I went to seminary, I'd never heard a woman preach or pray in public. When I was a child, as far as I knew, there was no such thing as women who were ministers. But that didn't keep me from playing a game I created that I called church. I would go into my room and close the door and line my dolls up on the bed and preach to them. Best congregation I ever had. When I finished my sermon, I would set up a little tea party for them. And then after the tea party, I'd tuck them back into their doll beds, so that they could get settled down. But it turns out that the life of faith is hardly ever about being all tucked in and settled down. It's a matter of trusting that God has plans, and that sometimes those plans call for change, and the willingness to step out in faith, Magi-like, and to receive the fulfillment of the promises that God has made. To worship Christ, who is the star of the story. His light being the light of the world. The new elders and deacons to be ordained will be asked to kneel down, an act of humility, an awareness that when we serve Christ the star, we are serving not only the one who is the light of the world, but who understood completely that his mission was servanthood. Nobody in the Christian church is a big shot. We are servants of our servant Lord. A wonderful friend of mine who passed away in December was a great theologian named William Plaker. In a homecoming sermon he once preached, he said this: "The best way we show our love for the whole world is to love with a particular passion our little part of it." That's it. That's what we're here for, you and I, to love our little part of it. Because our part is waiting for each of you and for all of us together to get on with it, to get on with the work of Christmas. As the Quakers like to put it, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flock, then the work of Christmas begins, to find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to bring peace among brothers, to make music in the heart. So may it be. So may it be with us to the glory of God this year. Amen.